on you. Okay, we are going to begin. Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see everybody. It's nice. We get like, you know, 70-80% of the same people, which is great. There's a few new people coming in and out. What I want to do today in this in part four, again, I realize not everybody attends everything, is I want to build on what we've said and also just mention a few other aspects and ideas that I think are very important to understand, at least our relationship from a philosophical perspective to the state of Israel. I think want to deal with more aspects of halacha. I don't know if necessarily this gives us enough time to deal with it, which is why I'm slightly avoiding it. Obviously, there are halachic, you know, ramifications to what we're dealing with, but they're a little bit tangential from our perspective. Okay, number one, I mentioned on Monday the idea of the flag of Israel and what it represented in terms of the martyrs and its symbolism. What I want to do today is go back to that topic, and I want to give you a little bit more of a background about the flag, because I think there's a lot to there that has incredible, hashkafic or philosophical ramifications. Oh, sorry, I dealt with that flag on Tuesday. Monday was comparing and contrasting Hatikva to Emunah by Rav Kook. Okay, got to remember my topics here. Okay, this is the Wikipedia page for the flag of Israel. And I want to point out a few things historically. Again, some might be obvious, some perhaps are less obvious. And I want to add a few things that I've discovered over time. Number one, so as we're familiar with the picture, of course, of the flag of Israel, of the state of Israel, it's a white flag with a strip of blue at the top and the bottom, with the Star of David and Magen David in the middle. Now, Magen David, being a Jewish symbol, probably is just 400 or 500 years old. According to Wikipedia, it actually comes from late medieval Prague. And the flag is actually adopted, the Star of David is adopted as the Zionist symbol already in 1897 at the first Zionist Congress. And I mentioned on Monday that the flag is adopted officially way before the national anthem, because it's very interesting. On this flag, there's much less controversy, and I'll explain why. You have to understand, at one of the first Zionist Congress meetings, they were discussing the flag of the State of Israel. If you take a look at my cursor on the screen, Theodor Herzl wrote a famous book called Der Judenstaat, and Der Judenstaat is a pamphlet that he essentially wrote, which was about the address that you have the Jews needed the Jewish state, and he mentions in there we have no flag and that we need one if we want to desire to lead many men, we must raise a symbol above their heads, and look at the suggestion that he gives in 1896, he would suggest a white flag with 7 golden stars. Why? The white field symbolizes our pure new life, and the stars are the 7 golden hours of the working day. So those of you that, again, are familiar, based on socialist principles, you'd work 7 hours a day. You know, for some people, that's 6 hours or 7 hours too much, and for some people, 7 hours a day, that's only half a workday. depending on how you what your perspective is on labor. But you should realize that Theodor Herzl had no thought at all of having any symbol that had any Jewish component to it. It was a purely secular symbolic flag that he proposed. What happens at the Zionist Congress is a gentleman by the name of David Wolfson, over here, David Wolfson, was very upset at Theodor Herzl's proposal to propose a flag based on, socialist principles. And he's very angry. And so what he does, take a look over here. What does he do? He says, we already have a flag. We have a flag that's blue and white. And he, I don't know if that worked. I was getting a phone call. I don't know if that messed up with my with what I was saying. So I'm going to repeat that. David Wolfson at the Zionist Congress, when he hears in 1897 that Theodor Herzl is proposing a totally secular flag, is very upset. And he argues, and he says, he runs into the room waving a tallis that is blue and white, that has strips of blue on it. I'm going to come back to that in a minute. And he runs into the room and he says, we already have a Jewish flag. We do not need to look any further. And he had on him a tallit. And he said, we wrap ourselves in it and we pray every single day. That is our symbol. Let us take the tallit from its bag and unroll it before the eyes of Israel and the eyes of the nation. And so that was the original flag that was also proposed this time in the actual one of the Zionist Congresses. They added to it what's called the Magen David. And that's how the modern day flag of the State of Israel was in fact born. Which is an amazing story. And it officially gets voted as the official flag of the Zionist movement in the second Zionist Congress, which was held in Switzerland in 1898. And in fact, it was even hoisted up at the World's Fair in 1904, Summer Olympics. It was an amazing thing. And if you understand, imagine that the flag, a tallit, a symbol of Jewish life, of Jewish prayer, is being literally hoisted in front of the entire world. It was literally a dream that no one could have conceived. And I think it's a very powerful, powerful moment. Now, I'm sure many of you have seen, maybe you own a tallit, maybe you've seen a tallit around your house. It's not blue, it's black. So let me explain. The original tallit was definitely blue. What happened was as follows. I don't have it on me. It's upstairs. I'm not going to go get it. The Torah, the Bible tells us in Bamidbar, in Numbers, that the strings of tzitzit need to have strings that are regular strings, and they also need to have white strings as well. And I'm going to show you a picture. As you can see on the computer, these are all blue. One second. And but according to the Torah, we're not supposed to have just white strings. According to the Torah, we're supposed to also have blue strings, as you can see now on my screen. What happened was we lost the ability to exactly figure out how did ancient Israel dye the white strings of tzitzit blue. We lost that ability. And therefore, they put on the tallit blue stripes, even though the tzitzit themselves were all white, as a reminder of zecher, a reminder of tchelet. Tchelet that was once alive and well in ancient Israel. We lost the ability to ascertain the functioning of producing tchelet, the blue dye. Now, as an aside, which is not really our topic, I'll just throw it out there. That's actually changed in recently, as they've discovered the official name is called the Murlix trunculus, which is a snail, which is actually very, very common and is found off the shores of Turkey and Greece and comes actually, believe it or not, up to Israel every so often. And if you're interested, I have it now on the website itself. But there's no question it's an ancient dye. And in fact, there's an entire organization today in Israel that's producing this type of dye in order to produce the tchelet that existed before. If you should do it, if you should not show it as a whole, it is a machloket that I'm absolutely not going to deal with now. but it is becoming resurrected. Literally, again, the ancient dyeing methods that was clearly very popular in Israel went out of style, and now they've kind of figured out. And over time, by the way, this has been a pursuit of many individuals trying to figure out what was the ancient tchelet. But regardless, what was done in the past was that since they didn't have the dye, they chose to have two blue stripes on the tallit. And the purpose of having these two stripes on the tallit was in order to reproduce and, shall we say, to remind everybody of what it used to be on a Jewish prayer shawl. And so Wolfson, who is running in the middle of the Zionist Congress, he's essentially telling everybody, listen, we need to be able to teach the world and show the world what it is to have a Jewish symbol. And this becomes something which is of utmost importance to him. And the incredible, really, it's an incredible story that in fact it becomes accepted in the as the Zionist symbol. So that's pretty amazing. Okay. And I think that was the first thing I wanted to point out. Now, you should also realize that it is not just a matter of the flag, because there's a tremendous amount of symbolism in the blue and white itself. And a lot has been discussed in the symbolism of blue and white. And I'm going to add a little bit of thought from Rav Soloveitchik as well. Rav Soloveitchik, in an incredible essay that I recommend everybody to read. I'm sure it's online. I just don't know where it is online, but that's okay because I actually own the book. It's a great book, which was printed many years ago, and an article entitled The Symbolism of Blue and White. And in this book, in the book which is entitled The Symbolism of Blue and White, Rav Soloveitchik there discusses what it means to what does blue and white actually signify. And he says that blue and white really come from two very different aspects of Jewish thought and Jewish life. Number one, white, let's talk about white first. White represents this idea of clarity. White is a clear color. White is a color that demonstrates a sense of we are certain, we have a sense of clarity, things are obvious, things are bright. That represents the white. There's a sense of commitment. When it comes to, however, something like blue is a very different type of a color. Explains Rav Soloveitchik, do you want to appreciate what blue means? Let me tell you what blue means. Blue represents this notion of uncertainty. When you look up at the sky, you think you're seeing a blue sky. We all know the sky is not blue. We perceive it as being blue. Explains Rabbi Soloveitchik, blue is this color. Tchelet is this color, as the Talmud tells us. Blue represents the sky. It represents the ocean, even though the ocean is not really blue. And represents and reminds us of the Kisei HaKavod, literally God's throne and God's glory, something of mystery, something of mystique, something that we do not know. It is something which we cannot totally perceive and understand and comprehend. It's the world of mystery. It's a world of the lack of certitude and not being 100% certain. Explains Rav Soloveitchik, those two ideas are paramount importance if you want to understand both life, Jewish life, and then to extrapolate further the life of what it means of the state of Israel. On one hand, life itself has this notion of clarity. Most tzitzit, most Jewish rings are white when they're affixed to the garment. They're white. We have that sense. We strive for a sense of clarity, both in our relationships, understanding, and knowledge, and human creativity, and human initiative. All those things are, of course, essential. But there's a second component, and that's the component of uncertainty. That's the component of mystery. That's the component of we literally do not know what tomorrow will bring. Well, my friends, we can appreciate the blue and white in the situation that we live in. On one hand, life definitely used to be very white. We thought life was always white. We thought life was clear. Life was going on as usual. And then, of course, the whole COVID happened. And life quickly transformed from white to tchela, from white to blue, from white, from clarity to mystique. We thought we understood, and we, with a sense of certainty, we thought we were, you know, the elite in terms of like intelligentsia, in terms of medical science and knowledge. And boy, has our world changed. Literally, almost overnight, everything that we knew for sure, everything that we thought we were so certain, has completely changed. A special shout out, I see right now, Emuna Goldstein is joining us all the way from Israel. I want to just mention to Emuna Goldstein, she's a nurse on the front lines in Israel. So I want to just say hello to her. And of course, you know, her in-laws live across the street from me. So hello, Emuna. That's, I think, the world that we live in, appreciates in many ways that blue. But it is also true, not just because of COVID, but it's also true with the life that we live in. The more we can realize that we're not in control of everything, the more we can say to ourselves, you know, we actually do not know everything. We don't have answers. And the more we realize that we are in the hands of God, the more we realize that we can't control everything, that we know everything, the less anxiety we're going to feel. If we try to control everything, if we think we understand everything, that is only going to enhance our levels of anxiety and depression, because we're going to become very frustrated, as clearly this situation has demonstrated to us. The sooner we're able to live and appreciate the mystique of life, to appreciate the blue, the tchelet of life, I think the better off we are going to be. And maybe that's the message. That's the message, of course, of life. That's the message of a situation. And that's the message of also the state of Israel, right? As we said yesterday, many things in the state of Israel are in fact miraculous. We don't understand them, right? It is irrational to have that state being formed, as we said yesterday, where so many things didn't make sense. The fact that Stalin and the fact that the Soviet Union backed the foundation of the state of Israel, or that the Christian church, the Vatican even backed the state of Israel, that Czechoslovakia sold airplanes to the state of Israel, right? And the United States government even backed the state of Israel, which really, from a rational perspective, also didn't make sense that Truman supported its founding. And so yet all these things did happen in order, perhaps, to create what seems to be impossible and improbable, and that's the state of Israel. And I think it is depicted and found specifically in the colors of Tchelet, of Kachov Lavan, of blue and white, of Tchelet, which is maybe of a, you know, a bluish, you know, greenish color, right? I don't know, I'm not such a color guy. Right, to me, I call everything blue, and then my daughter said, that's not blue, but that's like, you know, sky blue. I'm like, what is sky blue? I don't understand. To me, everything's just blue, right? No, there's sky blue, and baby blue, and powder blue, and this blue, and that. Yeah, to me, it's just blue. Okay, apparently there are different things, there are different ways to describe what blue is. Fine, all right, one day I'll learn. But, you know, the idea of these two colors, I think, are very profound. And they represent both in Talmud and the Gemara, they talk about what this tchelet, what the blue represents, the concept of mystique and not understanding. It appears that the sky is blue, that the waters are blue, yet we really know that is in fact not true at all. And that helps us appreciate, therefore, the life that we lead in the world of God with this sense of, no matter how much we can try to understand knowledge and learn and study and all that is extremely important, we have to realize we are finite creatures and appreciate the unknown and embrace the unknown, embrace the mystique, how important that is. That was the first thing that I wanted to mention. The second thing and the second idea in the last few minutes that remain, Rabbi Sachs, it was earlier in the week, it might have been last week, I can't recall it all. Rabbi Sachs said something which really spoke to me and that I want to share with you. You know, if you go back in Jewish history, there's a concept called the private life of a Jew. that throughout our time in the world, we really led lives that were extremely private, meaning we didn't really have to deal with national issues or national agendas, what's referred to as Rishuta Yachid, our own private homes. Yeah, it's true. We had what's called, you know, Vadar Bar Ratzot. We did have, you know, national issues, but it was much more about our community. And in that particular, you know, context, in that particular area that we find ourselves, right? But we never really dealt with large communal national issues of interest before for the last 2,000 years. And we lived a very much, what's referred to as Rishuta Yachid, our private life. The Gemara says, in fact, after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash, we have what's called Dalud Amot of Halacha, four cubits of Halacha. Which four cubits, by the way, represents the private domain, right? You own your four cubits around, you know, what's called today, you know, personal space. You know, four cubits is even more than physical distancing. So, you know, now we're not allowed to even own four cubits. We can only own maybe one or two cubits. But okay, fine. That represents the private domain. The state of Israel and what really came to fruition already, even a couple of decades before the founding of the state, were questions of national interest. National interest, all of a sudden, issues like Shemitah. What do you do about leaving the land, which according to the Torah is every 7 years, you're not allowed to work the land? Well, what are you going to do? How are you going to survive in an agricultural-based society? How are you going to survive not to be able to work the land? That question was almost essentially totally irrelevant because agriculture basically did not exist and definitely not on a level of exporting goods across the world that was completely irrelevant. And now all of a sudden, in the last number of decades, it's become quite relevant. So national questions of economy, of an army, of Shemitah, all these questions, of course, you know, state and church, church and state, these issues, of course, come to the forefront, have literally been frozen for 2,000 years. They're now playing a very important role in the state of Israel. And therefore, we've transformed from what's called the private domain, Rishut HaYachid, to what's called Rishut HaRabim, the public domain. Right now, you know, the last, you know, few weeks, we took what's called our Rishut HaRabim and we went back into our Rishut HaYachid. Usually we're outside. You know, yesterday, none of you live in Thorn Hills. So yesterday in Thorn Hill, the bike came around, the shul came around, and it was like, you know, playing music with flags and everyone outside. It was actually really nice. In front of their own houses, of course. And it was to be outside and actually to see a few people was something that was remarkable. You know, Yom HaTzmi is the day of, you know, national communal celebration, and that usually was part of the day, and that was missing yesterday. So to be able to have that once again, I think, was a very powerful moment. And in many ways, that's what Israel represents. Israel represents, I can't just deal with, okay, what does it mean? You know, all of a sudden you have a budget for a state and you're allocating money towards, you know, sports, entertainment, arts and culture. Every dollar that you're doing towards that, you're taking away from national security or from education or from health. These were questions that Jews really didn't have to deal with for a very long time. We're talking about national budgets and taxes of such large scales, right? And an army and welfare, you need to think about, you know, sometimes in states, in many ways, all of a sudden you have to sacrifice individuals for the greater good of a state and a society. Now, it's obviously extremely dangerous and it's very complex when you do that. But nonetheless, it's part of a conversation that in many ways lay dormant for many, many years. I think to conclude with just a couple minutes left, we want to bring to the closure of this theme that we've been discussing in the last few days. I want to end with something which I've mentioned in a few different places over time, but I think it's an important message. We sing a song that's quite popular and quite famous at the night of the Seder, and that's the song of Dayenu. Dayenu literally means it would have been enough. But the actual stanzas themselves seem to be quite peculiar. One of the stanzas reads, you know, if God would have taken us to the desert and not given us manna, if not given us, sustained us, it would have been enough. What are we talking about? We wouldn't have been enough. We would have died in the desert. Or God takes us to Har Sinai, the Mount Sinai, and not provide us with the Torah, it would have been enough. What do you mean? It wouldn't have been enough. We wouldn't have gotten the Torah. So what in the world is the author of the Haggadah trying to tell us? It would have been enough. It wouldn't have been enough. What are you talking, right? So this, I believe, my friends, a very important theme, both of Passover night, the night of the Seder, as well as, I think, an important theme during this time. And that is, you don't say enough. What does enough mean? The night of the Seder, enough means in the context of, it would have been enough for us to be obligated to say thank you. You know, in life, sometimes we think you only actually thank somebody when the process has reached its conclusion. You know, I don't know, graduation, wedding. Thank you so much, mom and dad, or teachers, for everything that you've done. But whether we have an obligation to thank people every stage along the way, even if it's not complete, even incomplete. If someone gives you only a little bit and not everything, you're still obligated to say thank you. And the message of Dayenu, even though it begins with God takes us out of Egypt and eventually builds the Beit HaBechira, the Beit HaMikdash, every stage along the way, the 15 stages of Dayenu, each one obligates us to say thank you and a sense of gratitude. People of gratitude are healthier individuals. People who appreciate everything. And not to say, magiali, I'm deserving of it, I should get this. But instead, to be appreciative for everything that we have are healthier people, are happier people. They make them better children, better spouses, better individuals, better members of society, have a sense of gratitude. And I think that's exactly the message of Dayenu, and that, I think, is also the message of the State of Israel. It's true, the State of Israel is not perfect, has a lot of challenges. But just because there's challenges, just because it's imperfect, doesn't mean we don't say thank you and have a sense of gratitude and appreciation for everything that God has given us. And so with that, I think we have to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for God providing for us a state, a nation, for a sense of restoring Jewish pride, for giving the Jewish people a sense of hope, for really a state that cares about Jews all over the world, that is willing to, you know, leave no Jew behind and travel many places to bring Jews back, to whether it was for COVID or for various types of persecutions throughout the decades. And I think it's also an important message. The lives that we live in right now, we're in our home, we're in Rashut HaYachid once again, we're not in Rashut HaRabbi, we're not in the public domain. That's not the way we're supposed to lead our lives. We're supposed to be in the public domain. We're supposed to be out there in the world with friends and family and community. And while we're back inside of our homes in this sense of seclusion, in the sense of, you know, a little bit of physical distancing, it should lead to a greater appreciation for all God truly has given us, both in terms of our community, our people, our friends. And really want to thank all of you again. I've got to end with like a thank you, right? To thank all of you for really joining. Many of you have been extremely committed over the last few days and the last few weeks. And God willing, today's Thursday, I will see maybe some of you, you know, maybe tomorrow. Everyone's invited to a 2:30 p.m. pre-Shabbos Tish, L'chaim, with a Dvar Torah and Thought. You can bring a L'chaim too. Otherwise, I will see you again on Monday, God willing, at 12:30. Now I actually have to think of a theme for next week. Hopefully, by Sunday, I'll message it out. And if I don't see you tomorrow, I wish everybody Shabbat Shalom. Have a beautiful, uplifting, and happy, and productive few days and Shabbos. Bye, everybody. Thank you so much for joining. I'll stick around if anyone has any questions.
Thank you.
Bye. Good to see you, Rachel.
Good to see you, too. Thank you.